g'day, Annie and Tobias, and to all your listeners. Hello. I hope you're...
Oh, sorry. Yeah, go on. You're hoping what?
That you are all extra well.
Yeah, well, it's balmy here. Is it balmy in Tasmania?
It's cooler than overcast today.
So I suppose we'll get that later. Yeah, it was a bit crisp a couple of days ago, so we're sort of luxuriating in this almost a balmy weather.
I think it's time, given the election result, to pose a question that we touch on from time to time and give it a bit of an oomph, and that is, what does the election result mean for Australian socialists?
Well, yeah, I think so too, because as it was pointed out by the Green Left, that the satirical Chaser has put out that Labor secures biggest majority, excited to do nothing with it.
Yes, well, I'm not... you see, that's an interesting... that's what I really want to challenge.
Okay.
Is that sort of reaction. Because I think that's the easy thing to do, and it's a bit triggers a laugh. But we need to ask this question because for far too long, those of us who are socialists have basically made zero impact in terms of shifting our into a different sort of momentum. And we have to work out and understand that a lot more. My starting point is this, is we're going to have 6 to 9 years where the ALP will be define itself as the best manager of a system of continuing exploitation and expropriation, dedicated it to its continuity.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
One way of understanding that is to observe quite easily that the Labor government is a warmongering government.
Yeah, that's true.
And therefore, socialists are peacenecks, not warmongers. I don't think I know a socialist who is a warmonger.
Yeah, well, it does seem to be an oxymoron to want to kill yourself.
I do know feminists and anti-socialists who are warmongers. Well, know of them. But I don't know any socialists who are. And so we have the prospect that in the next, probably sooner than later, we will need an anti-war movement as big as that occurred 110 years ago and 50 to 60 years ago to neutralise and hopefully defeat any tendency towards warmongering becoming a reality.
Well, that actually...
Labor government.
Yeah, but that actually brings up a couple of points that... this disaffected youth, you know, the idea that if this government actually doesn't do anything about real reforms in relation to the environment, in relation to the very unpopular AUKUS deal with America and the cost of living crisis, that actually people will turn their back on them.
Well, I think it's all generations that are, to one degree or another, looking for a much different future that is far stronger and better for the majority of people than what Labor is offering. Everyone, this big thumping majority, of course, is on the basis of, at the very best, tinkering in a number of areas with very, very modest reforms that don't change the overall dynamic towards more exploitation, more poverty, more destruction of the environment, more heating of the climate, and so on. And mixed into that, of course, is this sort of, because of AUKUS and the ANZUS Treaty, hitching ourselves again to a hot war developed by a Trumpian approach, if you like, to rescuing the American empire, the USA, the empire of the USA. But the discussion's necessary because all of the public discussion is about what the election means for the established parties and the fields and so on. Yet we socialists, we were an active tendency inside election campaign to defeat the Dutton's LNP, and we celebrated as much as anybody. And we have every right to be to celebrate it and be proud of what we contributed. But we do contribute something different because we're socialists. Now, a quick word about what I mean by, you know, those of us who are socialists. Socialists are people who are not members of any particular party, but they may be members of some of the smaller socialist groupings and the more promising, developing ones, like the Victorian socialists. But socialists can be found, serious socialists can be found in the Greens and, of course, in the ALP. So we're talking about people who are to the left of the Labor Party in a social way and left of the Greens in a socialist way. Without having too much time, the essence of that is how much we are for democratic public ownership that is at the centre of everything we do to reduce the rate of exploitation of the working class and to prevent the extreme expropriation of segments of the environment of the natural world for the benefit of mining corporations. So that's the distinguishing feature of what we stand for more than other progressive people do. We talk about the recurrence of crisis, and we can explain that much better than progressives. We have a more complete and realistic understanding of why, firstly, the economic crisis is persistent in the sense of tiny blips of recovery that don't last for very long in the economy, no matter how you measure it, interacting with a climate crisis, interacting with a serious crisis in human relations, particularly misogyny and racism, and then, as I have emphasised from time to time in the past, a breakdown in the effectiveness and the trust in parliamentary democracy. Its inadequacy, certainly its sound foundations in universal suffrage and so on, but its inadequacy in tackling the crisis. So the crises interact and feed on each other and prevent them from ever being resolved because they're based in exploitation and expropriation.
Yeah, but Don, don't you think that ultimately socialists in this discussion would say that their belief structures privilege environment and humans, safety and security over that of the profit margin? And this is a major difference between the two worlds that are being expounded.
Well, the profit margin can be measured in a different way, and is at the heart of every commodity that is produced for daily life, whether it's non-discretionary, discretionary, or a luxury commodity, is produced for making a profit, as are most of the services that are required that go with it these days. So, yes, profit-seeking is at the heart of the system and at the heart of the crisis. And, there's, you know, we've talked about this before and we should come back to it. The thing today, in the time we have, is to say, what is it that socialists, being in so many locations around the progressive movement, why should we continue to practice what we stand for in a way that is so ineffective. That's getting things nowhere. I say we have to change.
Well, I mean, there's a historical precedent for it. Like, the Communist Party of Australia was a massive party, and it had massive impacts in electoral politics. And I think every time the election rolls around now, people talk about the ineffectiveness of partaking in an electoral system. But really, I think this election highlighted the fact that the failure to front another option for people really strengthened and emboldened a Labor Party whose first order of business was to increase productivity.
I'm pretty convinced that socialists need to participate in parliamentary elections as just one element of a strategy. The starting point has got to be this: is there is not a single socialist who can claim that our present mode of practice of what we stand for is making a serious difference. It's not.
I agree with you. So
we have the power to produce a better analysis of what's wrong.
Yeah.
But the way we are practicing referencing to strategy and policy, the interaction between those two things, is inadequate.
You reckon people should just be more cunning?
No. I think the most profound thing we can do is face up to the ineffectiveness, and then from there, the very first thing to do is to develop an alternative by involving more and more people together and producing a program, both an immediate and medium-term program that has strong socialist characteristics and makes sense to everyone. And the ingredients for that exist. The ingredients exist because around the country there are literally hundreds of organisations in different ways that are developing a struggle around living standards, fighting the tendency to crisis in that front, and of course in environmental organisations, and sometimes between in organisations that fuse the two. We have a peace movement that is struggling to become more effective and doing its very best. Inside those movements and organisations, there is a definition of what should happen instead. And that is all those hundreds of definitions of the alternative are mainly separated and fragmented. The big responsibility on us all is over the next 3 years to bring them together, to coalesce them into a common program that makes sense, because it means a better deal for the working people relative to both their economic needs and the restoration and recovery of the environment upon which the economy depends, and then stops the trend to warmongering.
To me, the chief among all these requests, though, is actually absent from the conversation now, the way I see it, is that people really need to... I keep thinking about this Diane de Prima poem where she talks about the most important war being that of the imagination, and really, what world are we imagining? And the most important part that is often, I think, missed from a lot of analysis is that this country needs to become a republic. The weight of the crown needs to be thrown off for any actual progress to be made. We can talk about socialist progress and everything to make, but if the crown is still firmly on the head, we're never going to be free of creating an actual alternative, because it will be all subservient to the monarchy.
There is not going to be any single silver bullet like that. That will be and should be an element in the program. So remember the five mega crises that we talk about. One of them is about democracy. What we say about Australia being a republic can be fleshed out in that dimension of the program. socialists have to find a way of producing an organisation and doing it relatively quickly, the next 1 to 3 years, that can bring all of the organisations together to produce that program. That's what our living existence as socialists in Australia should be about in the next 3 years or so, making that happen. Now, that does not have to be a political party, but it could be an organisation in which political parties or members of political parties can make a really good contribution.
Actually, Don, it's something during 2012 when there was the massive rallies here, effort to stop the East-West Tunnel. I actually saw, which was a successful campaign, and it was unusually successful, but it actually brought together a whole lot of people with a whole lot of different skills working together in an overall way for an objective. But it was fascinating because, people who were retired public servants got into gear and found out and tussled with the powers that be on that level, and people came at 6 o'clock every morning for the pickets, and all the different people did whatever it was that they could do. What you're talking about is a movement, right?
Well, I think that's the way you described that, and I was not directly involved. I lived somewhere else, but that's an excellent example of the point that I'm making. There are hundreds of examples like that, actually, where people organise themselves to collectively produce the elements of an alternative. Now, not all of those are socialist in character, and just because in some aspects of those that aren't socialists don't have to oppose. There might be some that are just plain silly and reproduce the problems we've got, but generally speaking, they are genuine alternatives. And they are the ingredients or the lifeblood of what ought to be the common program. Now, let me explain. There's a couple of examples that we can refer to. Your readers might like to go back to the big biography of Nelson Mandela, and I'm forgetting who the author was right now. But in that, there is a detailed description of how the Freedom Charter was produced. Now, I'm not saying we copy that, but let's look at the concept about how a core group, including socialists, leading the way, when you look at the detail, produced the process that led to the Freedom Charter, so that the masses of organisations that we're talking about were the contributors, not apparatchiks, not university economists, not special ecologists, but ordinary people produced the charter, because that's what the core group should be the best way of doing it. Second example, in the lead-up to the Uluru Statement, This is a smaller example, but just as profound in Australian terms. In the lead up to the Uluru Statement, a core group of Aboriginal leaders made sure that just about every community of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders had the opportunity to come together and say what they wanted to see in terms of constitutional other change and how that should be worked out at Uluru. And that included lots of basic education about how the parliamentary and constitution worked. That's the second example of a process where it comes from below. But a core group makes sure that that's what happens, because that's what it's dedicated to more than anything. Third example, right now in Aotearoa, in New Zealand, there is a similar process going on about living standards and the economy, reimagining New Zealand. We want to have a closer look at that, not to copy it, but to work out what is significant about it, to give support to it, because I think that's what it deserves, solidarity for it, but to learn about what is it that we can do along those lines. They are seeking to involve, the core group there is seeking to produce a program for a very different New Zealand that reverses the trends towards declining living standards and climate crisis and so on. They're on the right track.
I think increasingly, though, in the world stage, we can look also at the government of Mexico with its president leading the charge in this rebirth of that country and in providing better living standards for all its people, and also for spearheading the charge from the global south in terms of local economic production and balancing all things like indigenous recognition and involvement in a political process. I think it's a much more pressing example of what is an actual alternative and something we should strive towards.
Spot on. I think that's true, Mexico and several other.
Oh, we have to tidy up. We've only got 3 minutes to go, yeah. So final moments.
I think that's another good example. And we need to study what people's movements, how they're interacting with sometimes better governments than others to do exactly what I'm talking about.
Don, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you this week.
It is a good example, and we should be studying it, but getting on the front foot ourselves and moving away from this disjointed, ineffective practice of socialism. And it means that every single socialist must change. And it means that every single person who does not see themselves as a socialist, but just as a progressive, have to question the limitations in their efforts as well. Because they also contribute to a lack of momentum for serious change.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? You are the revolution.
Well, the revolution starts in the moments we are in. Not the right moments to come. It starts in the ones we are in.
Oh, Don, thanks very much for talking to us today. This is a very clarifying way of looking at the past election.
I hope that works for people and look forward to discussing it further.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks,
bye.
Bye.